Welcome to the Dastan Goy podcast, a collective exploration of Pakistani history and culture.
In this episode of Dastan Goy podcast, we get to sit down with Saim Sadiq, a Pakistani film director based out of Lahore.
Dude, thank you, Sam, so much for coming on the Dastan Goy podcast.
My pleasure.
Yeah, to start off with, I mean, like, I've spent the last 2 days looking and watching your films, and I absolutely love them, and all the intricacies and the narratives that are kind of intertwined in each and every one of them is so unique and so interesting.
Thank you.
I'd love to kind of start off by understanding you a little bit, kind of putting context for people around who is Saim, how did he get to where he is, what did you study, why, and what do you do now? Like, how did this kind of, you know, come about?
So my name is Saim Sadiq. Hello to all those who are listening or watching. I actually come from a very sort of conventional army background. My dad was in the army, my mother's a housewife, so it's a very at least when we started, it was a very typical sort of middle class family household while my dad was in the army, and then after he retired, he did well for himself. And also I traveled all across Pakistan, so I've been to Skardu, Nawab Shahab, Abbottabad, Quetta, like all of these places. Mm-hmm. I've grown up in, apart from of course Lahore and Pindi and all of those places, like the more conventional ones. And so it was a very standard upbringing, I would say. But then I knew that I didn't want to sort of go into either engineering like my sister or like 90% of the other people, or become a doctor or whatever. So still, my parents wanted me to get into lums or like get into a good college where they would just be like, you know, fine with the fact that, okay, he'll do well for himself. There's something on his CV. So I was like, okay, I'll get into lums, you know, if that's what you want me to do. So I got into lums and I ended up doing anthropology because it was just the most interesting thing that they had to offer for me. And also just perhaps closer to my interest, which I hadn't realized at that point in time. I loved watching films, but I didn't think that I could do them because it was not really a profession at the time that I was growing up.
Yeah.
There was no film industry to speak of. There was a drama industry, but again, even that was not something that I could see myself working in because it was just not, you know, I didn't mind watching them at the time and they were good, but I didn't.
Your narratives, your drama, they're very traditional, like Pakistani culture, which are very early, right?
हाँ बल्कि जब हम बड़े हो रहे थे ना तब उस जमाने में अब भी लाइक अर्ली 2000s में मेरीन जबार एंड व्हेन पीटीवी यूज्ड टू बी स्टिल गुड यू नो बिफोर ऑल दीज चैनल्स केम आउट तब ड्रामे बहुत बेहतर होते थे तब मेहरीन जब्बार के ड्रामे और जस्ट आप कुछ भी लगा लो 90s के बहुत सारे ड्रामे थे जो हम देखते थे पुराने ड्रामों देखने का भी होता था यू नो अनकही तन्हाइयां
एंड
सो वो आंगन टेढ़ा बहुत सारी और जो सिटकॉम्स भी आना शुरू
हुए थे अल्फा ब्रावो चार्ली भी था आर्मी का
अल्फा ब्रावो चार्ली भी था तो और उस जमाने में जो सिटकॉम्स भी आना शुरू हुए थे शाशलिक 50-50 यू नो वो सारे आई थिंक दोज वर थिंग्स दैट आई वुड प्रोबब्ली मोर इंटरेस्टेड इन डूइंग और बीइंग अ पार्ट ऑफ इन सम वे एट दैट टाइम बट देन व्हेन यू नो द चैनल्स केम ऑन बोर्ड इट बिकेम मोर ट्रेडिशनल व्हिच वाज अगेन मोर कंफ्यूजिंग फॉर मी बिकॉज आई कुडंट सी मायसेल्फ डूइंग दैट but anyways, I mean, I did anthropology at LAMS and then I ended up making a documentary for my senior project, which was about, at that time, you could still talk about those things. It was about blasphemy laws. It was about Joseph Colony that was burned on the charges of blasphemy laws. The whole colony was burned, but actually it was just a land grabbing thing behind it. And I wouldn't get into the whole detail. At that time, yeah, even then there was, of course, a considerable amount of backlash and all of that because Salman Taseer thing had happened recently. So people were less very reluctant to speak of it. But, you know, on a small scale level, if people are doing it, it was still allowed. I think now even on a small scale, student level, I don't think people would take up subjects that are too risky.
Yeah.
Which, again, I mean, speaks to, I don't know what direction we're headed in. But that kind of gave me a lot of confidence towards like actually being like, okay, I want to do it. I didn't necessarily want to do a documentary, But I was interested in sort of talking about social things and sort of, you know, formulating my view of the world through the making of something, you know. So then I finally, because of that documentary, my parents were like, okay, he has that interest and perhaps some kind of talent to maybe pull it off. So I started assisting Sarmat Khusert.
Okay.
Yeah. So which was on a project, Mor Mehel for Jio, which nobody watched it. It was a poor thing made, like, I think it was spent like a year making it. It took 5 months to shoot it, 6 months to prep it, but it was a lot of work, but it unfortunately just didn't work out. But that was a great learning experience for me. You know, it was such a huge project at that time. It was, I think, the most expensive TV show that was being made at the time. So it was great learning as an assistant. Again, Sarmad, I was always like a fan, but also just getting to work with somebody who's that experienced and that sophisticated also, you know, became
He's
like
an excellent really, storyteller.
Yeah. And also just very ethic, like just like learning professional ethics from him, you know, that I think I was just lucky to land there, because the biggest thing that I took away were like professional ethics and how to run a set and how to behave. And, you know, just the organizational bit of it was also really, really, I think, instrumental in sort of teaching me as a first film school, I would say. And then I got into Columbia, so I went there and I was there for 4 years. It was like the ending the shoot, and like a week later my flight was there, so it was just right off the bat, so I didn't get any free time, which was good. So because I was starting the journey a little late, you know, I was starting at 24 deciding what career I wanted to be in. So but again, Columbia again was like an amazing experience. I think it was just so international. It was not, it was an American film school, but, you know, it was populated by a very diverse group of people from all over the world. So it was just an interesting place to be and to learn, not just from, you know, the teachers, but also from the students who were there with me. And I made a bunch of short films there, but two of them turned out to be decent. So they did well for me. And then now I'm here.
So tell me a little bit about the two films that you made and how, you know, you kind of formulated, you get Abhi Aap, you've worked in Pakistan, you've grown up in Pakistan, you understand the intricacies and the narratives that are being spoken about and that are not being spoken about in Pakistan. And now you're getting a Western education and some one of the best film schools, and you're kind of understanding how your approach is going to be, right? So what, how did you kind of go about creating your own vision for what you wanted to communicate? Because I think what you studied at LUMS, like the anthropology bit, also comes in a lot with the work that you do, right? It's a very beautiful kind of intricacy. Jo filmmaking mein to, like filmmaking is a medium for sure. Like in jab aapki jo background hai, when it starts to show the different narratives in Pakistan that exist, aap darling dekh lo, paasban dekh lo. Nice talking to you, not necessarily Pakistani, but again, a very beautifully made story, but it's these human characters that you're kind of coming up with and narrating through this medium that are beautifully done. I'd love to kind of hear how you look at that and how those narratives came about.
I think overall, I mean, because of the anthropology thing, which at that time I didn't take that seriously. I was very interested in certain courses. I was not that interested in certain courses, you know. But what happened, I think, subconsciously was that there was sort of a respect or an interest, so to speak, in looking at other people, you know, who might not necessarily be me or like me, or even if they are me, but looking at them a little more academically at first, you know, like knowing that, you know, you can't just stand one day and be like, I'm gonna make a film about this blind Christian woman. You know, like there's a lot that goes into where, and in the 70s, you know, what, but you, there's a lot of work that needs to go into that beyond just your idea or ambition. And I think that was something that I learned at first at LUMS, you know, just like whatever subject that you're tackling, whether it be a person or a theme, there is a lot of work that you need to do beforehand to be able to become capable of talking about it.
To give the honesty that it requires, also, right?
to have a view or like a thing that you truly want to explore, you know. Otherwise, there is a lot of we were talking a bunch of us the other day, there's a lot of influx of films now which are also like very liberal and all, but they come from such an NGO perspective of like, oh, these, like, let's look at the, I don't know, LGBT community and their rights are being taken away in Pakistan. So, you know, but that's it to the conversation, or feminism or whatever. Like, there's no real interest often, I feel, in people who don't come from academic backgrounds to really explore something and have a worldview to say something that's different, apart from women should get rights. That we all know that. We all agree on that. You know, if you're making something, you're making a film about like women should get rights, like it, after a point in time, you can tell that there is not much to say there for the film, you know, apart from just using that kind of clickbait subject that's common, in vogue. So I think that learning happened rather organically through LUMS. And apart from that, I think I just always try to find a personal connection. Like, why am I making this? Like, why am I making Darling, and why are you not the one making it? You know, or what would be the difference in a way? And I try to do something where it's personally interesting to me. So like, I have to want to watch that film first, even if nobody else wants to watch it, I want to enjoy it. So, and I want to be moved by it. And I, so for that, that process, I think, keeps you sort of on your toes. You don't go in with a sort of didactic view of things. Okay, I am here to say this, this, and this, you know. You go in kind of looking to explore something, you know. You're kind of open to facing questions that you might not have the answers to, even while you're shooting a particular scene. You might not know how it's supposed to be done or what it means, but you know what, like broadly what it's about, but you don't know what it's saying. And maybe the actor does something, or the camera person does something that you're like, oh, I understand, like the something that I wrote, which I didn't really get why I wrote it. Now this person has come on board and sort of like, you know, added a layer to it that kind of explains to me something that I didn't know already, which is, I think, the most beautiful part of filmmaking, which is not there in other forms of art per se, because you're not alone exploring something. There are a lot of people who are exploring with you. So as long as there's a personal connect for me, I think, and something that I can sustain for a year or so, because that's how long it takes to make a film, I guess.
The interest.
Even with nice, like, the interest. Like, even with nice talking to you, it's about, it's not about deafness per se, and it's not even about deaf people, but it's about language. And I grew up with three cousins who were hard of hearing and who couldn't speak. And so I had my childhood was spent around these three cousins who had a very different bond with us, but a very different bond amongst each other. And I was just always curious as a child to looking at them, like being fascinated by, like, they just seem more closer to each other than I am to my sister. And just based on the fact that when they're talking, they're always looking at each other because they can't look away, because they wouldn't understand what the other person is saying.
I had never even what made the mouth mess in the eye, okay, like,
eye contact is a must.
Yeah.
And so having consistent eye contact versus the way we're talking, obviously, in the same duration of period for 15 minutes, if I'm talking to you versus two people who are using sign language, they're closer to each other in those 15 minutes than you and I are, because there is that kind of, the awkwardness is going to, has to dissipate if you have to communicate constantly. So I was interested in that, and to explore how does that romance play out in sign language versus when the sign language sort of spell is broken. So even that was like a personal connection thing for me.
And it was beautiful. Like, I mean, watching Nice Talking to You and seeing that, I mean, I was watching it with my wife and I didn't notice that both spoke, you know, like, because that there's that one moment where he's helping the person at the ATM.
Yeah.
And I missed that. And Walia, my wife, was like, he speaks. And then she speaks as well. And then you start to see the evolution of the characters and the relationship of the two when that happens. And when they start kind of like, the guy starts singing, you know, on the street musicians. And it was so beautiful to kind of see that complexity. Yeah, there's a couple of things that you said, jo mujhe bahut achhi lagi cheez hai, ke the research that you do to give the honesty to the person, and then the way people tend to look at Pakistan and look at it through the NGO lens, right? Which happens a lot in third world countries, in emerging markets, which sometimes is not true to what is actually happening on the ground, right? Because itni narratives hain Pakistan ke andar, and then sub narratives as well, and the people that, you know, are living, and sometimes they're good things, sometimes they're bad things, but all of these stories require real research to kind of get in to understand the dichotomy ke Pakistan mein kya, you know, if that is what you're going to talk about, and that's something that you're going to that you're going to be looking into, like a film that you made, like a film like Darling has a very different context, for instance, in Pakistan and the cultural nuances of Pakistan than it would somewhere else, right, with that same community. That's like true. If you were to take the LGBTQ community in North America or in Pakistan, the nuances are very different and the stories are very different. The awareness that you kind of come out with, like for instance, taking Darling and the beautiful role that Alina played and the way that you were able to kind of communicate the nuances, not just about Alina, but also Shani, the other character, and the nuances that, you know, that are not just about her when you initially think like khali isi ke bare mein baat ho rahi hai.
Yeah.
But actually there's like this whole dichotomy of the other angle where he's feeling a little bit like, oh, you know, like jo understanding, because there's cultural references and cultural things that Pakistanis will have because of what we've been kind of shown. And then there's showing a very beautiful story and real world kind of these moments which show you a different perspective on the person, which I found absolutely beautiful. And thank you. To be honest, like the first time I watched it, it was very quickly. I didn't get all of the nuances. But then when I, again, like that's why I was like, please show me these videos, so these films, so I can see them and I can actually really understand them. Or dusri baar jab maine dekhi, to you start to get different perspectives. And it's really kind of understanding, it's really beautiful to kind of understand that you have done so much research and then what shows me that you've actually done the work is the way that you're telling me about it, the way that you're acting on sets, because you're getting context as you're going along. You are not the end all be all who knows everything about the subject. You are the person kind of coming in with an open mind. Okay, you know what? I don't know. This is a perspective that I can have because everyone has a perspective and a bias. Lekin there are people that might know more about this than I do. Okay, unki zindagi kisi aur tarike se aayi hai, meri zindagi kisi aur tarike se aayi hai, but they can add.
Yeah, and I think that's just some, it's always perplexing, like confuses me, because I tried to watch all the, there were a bunch of documentaries that were made, like two or three about trans people from Pakistan. So I tried to watch all of them, you know, and they weren't, it wasn't that they were, I'm not going to review them, but there was a tendency to define them by like these NGO terms of what diseases do you have, what hormones are you taking, what discrimination have you faced, you know, and I, by the end of the, they were all the documentaries were following a bunch of subjects who all happened to be trans, and I was like, I don't know one from the other, you know. I don't know, because they have not been individualized at all, because the, I mean, again, documentaries can be about that and about other things, but at least for fictional narrative, I think that's a really sort of almost cheap to pretend to come from a perspective of like, I'm going to talk about this fancy thing that people don't talk about, and I'm going to pretend to be like, you know, like, I don't know, a serious or whatever filmmaker, but then actually have no interest in these people at all. And I don't think that you have to have interest to show that you're a serious filmmaker. I think it just has to be there. I am just interested generally in certain things. If you ask me to make a film about mathematics, I can't do it. You know, I'll do it in an NGO kind of, whatever NGO mathematics would be. But, you know, because I'm not interested in mathematics. So I can't make a film about a scientist. I don't think so at this point. And I think people should, that's why, just make it about something that you truly have questions about, that you're truly curious about, you know. So half the dialogues in like the most talkative scene of Darling were written by Alina. She doesn't know that she wrote them, but she wrote them because she said them to me and I was like, wait, and I wrote them down. I was like, okay, go back and say this, you know. And that happened in my house when I was talking to her, and then she was saying these things and I was like, okay, and the scene was already written. The script was there. The scene was there. Mm-hmm. She was rehearsing for that scene. She was learning the lines that I wrote. And in the middle, she was talking to me and I was changing the lines that I'd written and be like, okay, no need to remember this one. You know, just like we're changing it. We're going with what you said. Because that's the kind of insight that she had that I cannot. And it's a completely selfish exercise. I'm not trying to be noble. It's selfish because it's making my film better.
100%.
It's adding kind of something more interesting and authentic and more kind of specific knowledge or drama to my film that I cannot bring. So I'm basically being a thief you know, very selfishly so. And I don't like, you know, it's not a noble exercise. I just want to clarify, it's a very selfish exercise because you're trying to make your film better.
That's amazing. You go with that mindset, no? Like that's a very self-aware mindset that you're going with, and I think that's really beautiful. And then Paspan is another narrative, which I loved, because there was this innate struggle that you see in Mehrbano, right? Like, jo end mein jo struggle aata hai. Like, here's this like perfect girl who's trying to be like the perfect person and trying to achieve that Pakistani goal ke humne bahar jana hai, maine ye yahan pe padhna hai, maine ye karna hai, wo karna hai. But then there is also this really emotional kind of relationship that she has with her grandmother that she's caring for, which is a very, you know, consistent narrative in Pakistan because of the family dynamic and of the community dynamic and the way you kind of look at that. And then the role that Sarmat plays as well. These are realities that even fictional, like, and these are realities that you get to see in Pakistan. And the way that you see the struggle in the actual actresses and the actors, it's just so beautifully like done. So I don't know why you said don't watch it, because I absolutely loved it. I think it was.
I don't know, because all the things that I said that Paspan gives me a little bit of a. You know, the same vibe, the NGO vibe that I was kind of bashing before, but it was 4 years ago. So, I mean, I am not like, I think Mehrbano is really good in the film and all the actors are really good. Like Nasreen, Nanti, Sarma, they're all great. I think there are good things about the film. The script was not interesting. It was not written by me initially. It was written by a Chilean writer, my friend.
Okay. Yeah.
And she wrote it about her mom's relationship with her mother.
Wow.
And I read it, and I used to share a bedroom for 10 years with my grandmother until she passed away in 2001. So I had a similar relationship, and I just read it and I was like, I don't understand how this is set in Chile. This is set in Pakistan,
yeah.
You know? And she was like, oh, it was just like a very universal kind of a relationship story. So, I'm not the biggest fan of it. There are things about it that I like. There are a lot of things that I can't defend if somebody was to really sort of go at it. But again, if nobody does wants to, I'm not going to point them out. But I think Bano is really good in the film. I think
he was
Bano
really good, I think.
That was the first time I worked with Bano as a director. And that was the time when I was like, okay, I want to work with her forever. Like, she's a very weird, very exciting actor, you know, like she's just who can truly surprise you. And sometimes she can do horribly also. But when she does well, she does it really, really well. So that was, I think, the takeaway from the working relationship that I had with her.
It's awesome. And to be honest, like you see, like when you see it in unison, like aap pehli movie dekho, phir Nice Talking to You dekho, phir Darling dekho, you see the evolution of you as a filmmaker and as a storyteller as well. Like there is
Nice Talking to You is the one I can defend the most. I like it the most.
I love it's all like favorite. They all have it's, really. Cool
I like
things.
Watching it.
It was lovely. Like we watched it last night. We watched all of them last night. It was brilliant. But yeah, now like coming into Pakistan a little bit, like for me as an outsider, being in Dubai, lived most of my life here, born here. I didn't know that these stories and these films were coming out of Pakistan. And that to me is disappointing of myself. Ki mujhe pata nahi tha ki itne zabardast filmmakers.
It's not you. I think it's just generally because they're not. I mean, who knows that these films exist even today, even in Pakistan? You know, like a few people might know about Darling. Nobody knows about Paspan. I never put it out online. That's on me for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And Nice Talking to You is also not online. Like, it's not even set in Pakistan, but it's still made by a Pakistani filmmaker. And, you know, and that's just you talking about me. There are a bunch of other people who've been making films and they travel sometimes to festivals, sometimes
100%,
they don't, but
yeah.
Still. But they exist, but there is no sort of real platform in terms of, because most of them are short films. And honestly, like at this point, I'm not sure how it's going to go forward, because there's a bunch of work that exists in Pakistan that student filmmakers have done, that young filmmakers have done. Sometimes they have had money, sometimes they haven't had money.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're like little home videos, but beautifully done. And it's just sitting in hard drives, in many, many hard drives all across Pakistan. And it's not out there because there's nobody wants to put out their film. I mean, some people do, but everybody's sort of waiting for, you know, they want it to be through a platform that can give them sort of an existing promise of a viewership. I can put out my film on my YouTube, whatever, make a YouTube, but who's going to watch it apart from my friends? And maybe it will go, you know, certain places and get some kind of virality, but maybe it won't. And most people don't want to take that risk. And so there's a bunch of work sitting in hard drives in Pakistan.
I've realized
if anybody wants to make a platform, yeah, so for short.
I've realized this over the last couple of weeks. Like, I've spoken to Hamza Bangash, I've spoken to Amir Ayaz, I've spoken to a bunch of indie, like young kids who are like 20, 21 that are making these films with their iPhones and like these Android phones. And jab aap dekhte ho, aapko lagta nahi hai ki yaar, like these are beautiful stories. And I've never heard of that. And I've never seen that. And when you look at the depth, some of them, like some of the longer films or some of the short films, like Hamza Bangash is brilliant. I think Umar Riaz is brilliant. Like, we're going to do podcasts with them as well to kind of, you know, see what they have to say. And I think it's really amazing. This talent exists, and like Darling won internationally.
Yeah.
Like, in Pakistan, mein kitne logon ne dekhi hai?
I think it's probably the most watched for short film. That's not online yet. It's gonna be online on 1st of October. So good for on that. But we held a lot of screenings, because I was very sure that I wanted the film to be seen. So we had about, I don't know, almost 10 screenings in Lahore. We had about 3 of them in Karachi. We had 1 in Islamabad. Most of them were pretty up. The Islamabad one, I think that you saw. No. You saw it at... Lahore was far more than 10 screenings, because then the Colony thing happened at Saga Theatre.
Yeah.
And that was just playing nonstop for, I think, almost like 10 days or something. So a lot of people got to see it, especially in Lahore, which doesn't happen that it's being screened for you to come and watch it, you know. And of course, we used that buzz from the award to get people to come and watch it, and they did, which was great. But apart from that, no. Usually Hamza's films. Hamza's made 3.
Yeah.
Hamza's a very good friend of mine, and I'm always like, you're making another film. Like, what about the previous ones? But like, his first film is my favorite, and it's so good. And it's been about 4 to 5 years, not 3 to 4 years that it's been done. It has completed its festival run or whatever. And it's out on Amazon Prime. Now, how many people are going to go watch it from Pakistan on Amazon Prime to watch it?
Yeah.
You know, because they have to pay for it. You have to pay for that short film. Now, who's going to have credit cards already? It's a very small segment of like people. So it's not reaching out the way it should be reaching out. Yeah.
So how do you see that evolving? Like, what do you see being the right kind of platform? Like, mera Pakistan mein ye hai ki I don't understand the cinema culture. The cinema culture aapke wahan pe kya Lollywood ki films nazar aati, that's like a completely different, like, I don't even understand nor want to go there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, initially also, like the way that drama has evolved, I think Bollywood in India also evolved. Because Bollywood, like in the 90s, was questioning and was, you know, interesting. And then all of a sudden it became very commercial and very like this algorithm.
Early mid-2000s was also interesting. I think it's like post-2009-10, it has become this weird where the indie films have also started looking very formulaic and like their own kind of sort of small budget version of a Dabang, you know, like with the Ayushman Khurana film they all look the same to me now. Earlier they were very interesting, you know, but now they're all like, oh, small town boy in Delhi with one weird thing, you know, like, oh, either he's bald or he can't get it up, or I don't know, he doesn't speak or something of that sort. Yeah. He's gay now, like, you know, but it's the same story, just the main conflict is different, but the same kind of parents, the same kind of siblings, the same best friend, and you know, there you go, 10 jokes,
you have a hit film. You have your equation,
basically.
What I'm curious is I want to ask this to all of the filmmakers that I'm gonna do this podcast with, is how do you change and how do you create a platform in Pakistan? Like, what would you want to see? Because abhi cinemas mein aap like Emporium Mall mein to lagane se rahe, jo ye Islamabad mein kaun sa mall hai, like Centaurus, wahan pe cinemas mein to lagane se rahe. So
I did play it in 2 mall cinemas, Darling. Actually, I was at Atrium, we played in Karachi, and here also at Q Cinemas, which is not a mall, but it's a proper cinema. I was very happy with that, because it was weird. I was like, people are just coming to watch a 15 minute thing and then like, you know, a half an hour Q&A. It is possible, you know? And I don't know, like, again, I think people are so, I'm guilty of that as well. I think we have to accept the fact that it's not going to happen overnight. Short films nowhere in the world have a kind of viewership that feature films have. Yeah. So it's not a Pakistan-centric problem. It's a format-centric problem. Yes, you can get it onto Vimeo. You can get it onto YouTube. It is a little bit of a risk because there are fewer platforms, existing platforms that give you a kind of boost and an existing viewership. But you can. And if it goes, like I made after, I had to apply to Columbia and I made this short film, which I made in 5 hours, you know, and not to say the actors were really good. And I eventually just, you needed it to apply to Columbia as a visual sample, but I put it up online. Yeah. It somehow, it was a 20 minute film. And at that point in time in 2015, 20 minute short film on like Facebook, it's not something that I thought people would watch, but a lot of people watched it. Almost 500,000 people ended up watching it, you know? So you could get lucky like that as well. I mean, and it could reach out. It's a matter of, honestly, short films is also such a, such a intermediary form. Like it's almost like you're only making short films so because you can't make feature films yet, you know? So I for me, it was always true. Like I'm making short films because I can't make feature films because nobody would give me that money yet.
So that's now another, I'm not going to make any that's another short point. Films anymore. That's another point that I wanted to kind of come on, right? Like, because if for that, there needs to be funding. There needs to be an understanding that film, arts and culture, is something to invest in, right? Now, if you look at a market like France, where this has been going on for a very, very long time, the government can set up that they are going to keep preserving our language and we're going to keep on investing in young or up and coming or established filmmakers and directors. That's very good. And it's there, right? Like, but in an economy like Pakistan, where your deficits are so big.
It's there for us also, just by the way.
It
they
is.
Fund us. My feature film, the only like section of funding that has been secured is a German funding, which is a German funding for first filmmakers. And they give it to, I don't know, like 10 German filmmakers and like three international filmmakers. So there's far more support that you get European from European channels for us. But of course, I will be labeled foreign funded whenever the film goes out and all of that. So it's a tricky road, but there's none of that here.
So how does that dialogue start? Is my question. How do you, because like agar aap culture ko dekhte ho, Pakistan mein bhi achha khasa like deep rooted culture hai, right? Arts is there.
Of course, but
how do you
think?
Sorry, go on.
Sorry, finish.
My thing was,
no, you go.
How do you kind of get people to realize that this is yet a very valuable resource and something that will take our culture forward, that will bring dialogue? And
I think it's a very, I mean, we have a very long standing history of art and culture, but you also have to see what happens today. Like, you know, that culture is, we're on a very opposite end of the stream now, where artists are threatened, they're sent death threats, they're told not to make what they're making, they're told that they're foreign agents, that they belong to RAW or US or Israel, or, you know, that they have some kind of agenda of ruining our culture, whatever that culture is. I have never understood that. And so, unfortunately, we are very distant from our art and history culture, you know, from the subcontinent and even from Pakistan, like even like 40, 50 years ago, I don't know, you know, if a Faiz Ahmed Faiz would be allowed to grow in this land anymore, a new one. I don't know. I don't think it's possible right now, unfortunately. It takes a lot of commitment. I think it takes from two ends. I think it takes a lot of commitment from very persistent, very resilient artists to keep doing what they're doing and to keep putting work out one way or the other and not whine all the time about the fact that they don't have support. We don't. But if I started whining about how we don't have support, whereas other people have it, I would never be able to get any work done. Mm. So I have to just accept the fact that, you know, it's like everything else. It's not just with art, you know, like I'm right now in Lahore, but I live in Karachi. We have to procure our own water. you know, we don't get water. We have to buy water every 3 days to even wash our dishes. So in a country like that, where, you know, even your own water is your responsibility, it's not the responsibility of the state, how are the artists going to complain about and whine about that, oh, we're not being supported to blah, 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 to make our films and all? You know, it's too big of a mess right now. And I think you just have to be resilient and just accept the fact that you have to get your own water and you have to get your own funding to make films both. You know, both of those things, you're on your own. That acceptance is very important. That doesn't mean that you don't fight the system, or you don't try to sort of engage in a kind of dialogue or practice that can lead to some sort of support from governments. For example, very small thing, but Pakistan National Arts Council with the government is now doing a filmmaking course. You know, Sarmad is teaching there, I'm teaching there, a bunch of other very, very good people from Pakistan and abroad are teaching there. That's something. I don't know what the impact of it is going to be, but that is something, right? That's one thing. And then there are many ways that the government, if it so wanted to, so I was talking about the commitment, I think one commitment is from the artists, but the other needs to be from the government, which is of course absolutely not there. There is not, you know, you don't have film institutes, not even for technical stuff. You know, there are, like, for example, a country like Colombia has tax incentives that it gives to filmmakers that, oh, if you're going to shoot this film in this particular location, we're going to give you a tax incentive. We're going to give a lot of your money, like a big chunk of your budget is going to be given back to you. You know, and it suddenly become a very lucrative place to shoot, not just for Colombians, but for people all of Latin America and US. You know, people are going there to shoot there because of the tax incentives.
Yeah.
These are things that the government can do if it ever got to thinking on those lines, but I don't think they are. I think their idea is still Ertugrul and that's fine, but they haven't even made the connection of, like, how do we want to make our Ertugrul here? You can't.
Yeah.
And you can't because you don't have any infrastructure. You don't have any, you have, of course, in Karachi, a sort of a TV infrastructure and somewhat for films infrastructure to make films, but those infrastructures belong to these three big production houses, ARY, Hum TV, for that you need, you know, if Humayun Saeed is producing your film, you will have the infrastructure that you need. But if you don't want to make your film with Humayun Saeed, or Humayun Saeed doesn't want to make your film with you, in those cases, you're pretty much on your own, you know? And so, but there are, for example, Sarmad is a very hopeful example for me. There was no industry to speak of in Lahore. Sarmad has shot two feature films in Lahore. He's built that infrastructure.
Yeah.
You know, he has an office here. If somebody comes tomorrow and says, oh, we want to shoot something in Lahore, you go to Kusit Films ka daftar and they will tell you where you get what from, and they will have all the vendors and they will know how to manage this shoot perfectly. You know, whatever size of the shoot it is, you know, they've done pretty decent big sized film and then a small film, so they know. So there are those individualistic examples that are coming up, and you know, that's an example of the resilience of, like, people being like, okay, fuck it, I don't have any support, I'm just gonna make my own make my own production house. You know, I don't know if he wanted to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. If I never heard from him that he wants to, I don't know. 10 years ago, I don't know. But I guess he realized that if I want to make my own films the way I want to make them, I'll have to do it on my own.
Myself. Yeah. So, dude, it's really enlightening, nah, to kind of understand your industry and the kind of questions and the dialogues that are important for you. And to kind of, for me at least, to kind of understand what you go through, because I like for us, for our other stuff that we do, we do venture capital and we invest in startups, and even that infrastructure is not there. And we are now lobbying with governments and creating associations to kind of create that infrastructure as well. So I think it's very early days for filmmaking as well. But for me, over the last couple of weeks, what I've seen has just, like, gotten me so excited. To see all of this.
It is exciting. That's true. There are a bunch of people who are say up and coming in a way that, you know, they're interested, they're eager, they're ambitious enough to really not just be like, oh, I made this short film and then I disappeared. They're going to make films. They're going to make feature films, and they're going to make sure that they release, hopefully, in theaters. Yeah. There's a bunch of films that you will see, I think, in the next 3 to 5 years. And then we'll like talk in 5 years and then see where, like, you know, what the industry is like now, if we have a space for like an indie or a slightly more sensible kind of film, or if we're still seeing sort of the big films, the comedies ruling the roster. Yeah. I mean, that's just a wait and watch thing. But there are people making films now, which is good.
Sayem, thank you so much, Yad, for taking out the time.
Of course.
And sharing your views. This has been awesome.
Of course.
Thank you so much for listening. Please follow us on Instagram and YouTube for more stories. You can get in touch with us via email contact.dastangoy@gmail.com. Until next time, thank you, shukriya, meherbani, khudafiz.